You've heard this is the week of Christian unity, so we all do the pulpit exchange. I think Simon is at Albert Road Methodist this morning. My colleague Jonathan is at All Saints, which will be a surprise for him and for them, I think. We've got Sue Fender at Tabernacle, and you've got me, so I'm sorry about that. If you've got a Bible, thank you for welcoming me this morning and for inviting me. I've been to Emmanuel to preach a few times. I've been to Cosmeston to preach a few times, but it's my first time since you've come together and formed this new work, this new Church of Eden. It's my first time with you, so it's a real pleasure, real joy to be here. If you've got a Bible, turn, if you would, to Matthew chapter 9. And we're going to be reading from verse 14, just a few verses this morning, from Matthew chapter 9. This follows on from the story of where Jesus has called Matthew, the tax collector, to come and follow him. And he's been at a party at Matthew's house, and the Pharisees have criticized him and have been asking, why is he spending all this time with sinners? And then it drops on, and then John's disciples, it says, verse 14, then John's disciples came and asked him, how is it that we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? Jesus answered, how can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he is with them? The time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. Then they will fast. Then he said these words, no one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth onto an old garment, for the patch will pull away from the garment, making the tear worse. Neither do men pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst and the wine will run out and the wineskins will be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins, and so both are preserved. Got a little film clip.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology, don't know much about a science book, don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I love you, and I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for.
Yeah, calm down. It's just a half naked man, don't worry about it. I don't know about you, but in my house, we've got a cupboard, a drawer, that's full of old mobile phones and chargers. What happens is from time to time, one of us will get a new phone. And the question comes, what do you do with the old one then? Because it's too expensive, it's too valuable, it still works. And you don't want to just throw it away. And so you put it in a drawer and you put the charger in the drawer because, of course, every phone's got a different charger. And after a few weeks, you've just got this pile, a few years, you've just got this pile of chargers that you don't know what they go with and phones that you're never going to use again. And it's all just there wondering, what do you do with it? See, I come from a time, I'm a bit older than most of you by looking around. And I come from an age where you just didn't throw stuff like that away. It was too valuable. But of course, we live nowadays in a throwaway culture. My kids will just, oh, throw it away, send it off in a packet, we'll get a few quid for it. We just get rid of it. And we live in this throwaway culture where something breaks, we get a new one. We just get a better version and throw the old one away. But that throwaway culture hasn't been the culture of most of history, of most of cultures around the world. And it certainly wasn't true of the New Testament world. If something broke, then you mended it. If something still had life, then you carried on using it or you passed it on to someone else. When people had a lot less, they looked after what they'd got and they valued what they got and they recycled it and they reused it and they mended it. And that's partly what Jesus is talking about today to illustrate this parable of the kingdom of God. Throughout his teaching and his ministry, Jesus from time to time would tell stories, parables, to illustrate some spiritual truth. He'd take something from everyday life, something that people recognized and something that people knew about, and he'd use it to make a spiritual point. The word parable comes from two Greek words, para, which means to get alongside, to comfort someone by getting alongside them. I've spent quite a lot of time this last couple of weeks with paramedics, with a number of our older folk, and the paramedics who come in and get alongside folk who are struggling. And the word from balos, which means to throw. It's where we get the word ballista from. And so the Pharisees and Jesus would just make up these little stories. And one of the things that's a bit of a shock sometimes to people is when you realize these stories are made up. The story of the Good Samaritan is made up. It's a parable. It's something that the Pharisees would just throw into the conversation, just drop it in alongside the conversation in order to make a spiritual point. And Jesus does two of those in this little reading we've had today from Matthew chapter 9. And the first one is about patching a piece of torn cloth. When your clothes tear, Jesus says, of course, you fix them, you mend them, you patch them. You don't throw them away, you fix them. When I was about 10 years old, maybe a little bit younger even, I had my first pair of jeans. And my mum sent for them off to Grattan's catalogue and had sent her a shilling off each week. And I got this pair of jeans. And this would have been about 1969, I suppose, 1970. And it was a big, big deal. And I got my 501 Levi jeans and I put them on. And the first thing my mum made me do was get in the bath. Just like on the advert, I had to get in the bath because in those days when your jeans came, listen, this is going to sound a bit weird, I know, but in those days when your jeans arrived, they were too big. Because everybody knew that cloth, when you washed it the first time, particularly some natural cloth like denim or cotton, when you wore it the first time, it shrank. And so you'd buy your clothes a little bit too big, put them on, wash them the first couple of times, they'd shrink, and then they fit perfectly. And everyone in the ancient world knew this. If you took linen, if you took cotton, if you took natural fibres, wool, and you made some clothes out of it, the first few times you washed them, they were going to shrink. And that's not a big deal, because everybody knows it's going to happen. The problem comes when you get a tear in that cloth. And you get a patch and you stick it on. And if the patch is made out of new material, then the next few times you wash it, that's going to shrink. But the clothes have already shrunk. They're not going to shrink anymore. So as the patch shrinks, so it would tear and stretch and rip the original cloth. And Jesus says, nobody wants to do that. You don't put new cloth onto old clothes, because as it shrinks, it will ruin the clothes. You don't want to do that. And then he has this second illustration, maybe one that we're not so familiar with today. But it's the illustration of wine and of wineskins. Now, nowadays, when you make wine, you make it in barrels or you make it in glass demijohns like those. And you stick an airlock on the top, either in the big bung on the top of the wooden barrel or on the top of the glass demijohn. You'd stick an airlock. What happens is you take your fruit and you put your yeast in it and you put your sugar in it and you smash it all up and some water and you put it into the jar and it starts to ferment. The yeast starts to eat the sugar and turns the sugar into ethanol, into alcohol. And as it does that, as a byproduct, it produces carbon dioxide. And in a modern method of making wine, the carbon dioxide just bubbles around the airlock and it comes out and you're left with just the wine. But they didn't have this kind of technology in the ancient world, and so they did it a bit differently. The new wine was actually made in the wineskin, so the sugar and the fruit and everything would all be smashed up and made into a liquid, and then it would be put into the wineskins, a leather wineskin made out of an animal skin, and it would be sealed and it would be put to one side to ferment. And as the wine fermented, as the yeast ate the sugar and produced the carbon dioxide, so the wineskin would start to stretch. And there was no problem, because the wineskin was made out of new leather. And it was soft and it was supple. And as the carbon dioxide was produced and as the wine fermented, so the wineskin would stretch and stretch and stretch and stretch. I actually found some photos for where they still do this today in Turkey and in Greece and in places like that. And there's whole animals just made up into wineskins. And they've bloated up to huge, vast sizes. They actually look quite gross, which is why I didn't bring the photo. But just the skin stretches. And then when it's finished the fermentation process, you take the cork off, you allow the gas to escape, and then you can either store the wine or you can drink it. The trouble was with the wineskin was that once it had been stretched and once the wine had been drunk, They might toss the wineskin outside if they were nomadic. They might just throw it outside the tent into the sun, into the sand, or maybe into the backyard, or maybe it'd be put into a storeroom or into a cellar. And as it was put there in the sunlight or in this dry storeroom, it would start to dry out. This stripped skin, which had already been stretched, would be put to one side and it would start to dry out as well. And what it meant was that this pre-skinned wineskin, after a few weeks, would be dried up and cracked and hard. And so if you tried to put some new wine in it and stop it up again, as soon as it started to ferment, it would split. The skin was hard. It had lost its suppleness. The skin was stretched. It had lost its elasticity. And when you put the new wine in, the wine would start to ferment. The carbon dioxide would form. The skin would try to stretch, and it couldn't. And so it would split, and you'd ruin the wineskin. Valuable wineskin. You're wanting to reuse it, and it would split. And the wine would run out and be ruined, and the skin would be torn. But there's something we need to know, to see, to understand this illustration fully, and what Jesus was saying. And to do that, we need to look at the original language a bit. The New Testament, Matthew, is written in Greek, and we need to have just a little look at some of the Greek words. Now, the Greek word for wine is oinos. And in this sentence, in this paragraph, it's been changed to make it fit into the sentence. And so we get this word, oinon. And then the word for new is neos. Now we recognize that, the word neo, for new. So new wine is oinon neos. And where Jesus says you don't take new wine and put it in old wineskin, he says you don't take oinon neos. And it's that word neos, new, that I want us to focus on just a minute. Because when we drop down to the bit about new wineskin, Matthew uses a different word for new. He talks about askos kainos, or kainos. Askos is the skin, is the leather skin, the wineskin itself. And the word kainos is the word for new. So he says when you want new wine, you have neos wine. But when it comes to new wineskin, it's kainos, wineskins. And he uses a different word. And the question is, why does he do that? And the answer is simple. The word kainos doesn't mean new. We read it as new wineskins. And if, I guess whatever version of the Bible you've got, if you open it up and read it, it'll say new wineskins. But the word isn't new. What that word is renewed, is restored, is made like new again. You see, they didn't live in this throwaway culture. The wineskin was too valuable, and so the skin would be reused. But it had to be renewed. It had to be kainosed first. And this practice still goes on today in Greece and in Turkey. And actually, when I spoke about this a little while ago in Tabernacle, someone came up to me at the end of the service and said, when I was in, a lady called Dot, when I was in Nepal, we did the same there. And what you do is you take your old wineskin and you steep it in water. You put it into a stream and weigh it down with rocks, or you put it into a tub of water, and you just let it soak for weeks. My friend Dot said that in Nepal, when they did it, they do it with salt water, because the salt water would get absorbed a bit quicker and a bit easier. But you just let it soak and get wet and get waterlogged. And you let that old, cracked up, stretched leather wineskin start to absorb in all that water. And as it did, it would start to shrink as well. It would start to go back to some of its original shape. And it would start to become soft and supple again. And then when it was nice and waterlogged, you take it out and you start rubbing it with oil. Take some sweet oil, some olive oil, and just start rubbing it into the skin. Just massaging it in, making it soft and supple. And making it just like new again. Making it useful. You kainosed it. You renewed it. You made it something restored. Just as a total aside, and nothing to do with what I want to say, but when Jesus was at the Last Supper, you know he takes the cup of wine. And he says, this is my blood of the new covenant. What he actually says is not neos covenant. He says kainos. I'm taking the covenant which you know about. I'm taking this cup which we share every year at Passover, a sign of our freedom in God, the sign of our freedom from slavery. I'm taking this cup and I'm renewing it. I'm giving it back its original meaning. I'm giving back to you what God meant it to be. We've turned it into something else. It's become a tradition. It's become part of what we do every year. But I'm renewing the symbol of this cup of wine and the freedom that we know. That one's just for free. The next time you take communion, the renewed, the restored covenant. And in this context, remember, Jesus is talking to John's disciples. They're coming and saying, we got questions about the way you practice your faith. We know how you're supposed to practice your faith. We fast and we're serious about our religion and we're very serious people. And here we see you and your disciples, you're not fasting and you're not doing things that we expect you to. And it comes hard on the heels of the calling of Matthew, where Jesus has been at Matthew's house and the Pharisees have said, what are you doing hanging around with sinners? What are you doing hanging around with tax collectors and drunkards and going to parties? And Jesus has that conversation where he says, well, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, it's the sick. So I've come to sinners because they're the ones who need to hear good news. And the John's disciples have come to Jesus and say, what are you up to? John's got this question. He's in prison and he's sent us and we've got this question. We're fasting, we're praying, and you're just partying. What's going on? And Jesus says, listen, religion is a bit like an old wineskin. It can become hard and cracked and inflexible and useless. I've come to restore to kainos the message of the kingdom of God. That stuff that we've done was okay, but it's actually become shrunken and no good for what we need. And I've come to restore it. I've come to bring good news for all people, not just for a few religious people, but for the whole world. I've come to restore God's original message of the kingdom and of good news that's based on mercy and on grace and on forgiveness and that welcomes sinners. It doesn't beat them up. I've come to teach and look at things differently. I've come to kainos our faith, to restore it and renew it back to what God intended it to be. You know, from time to time through history, the church has had to stop and pause and re-examine itself and say, you know what we're doing isn't working. We've got to renew it. We've got to restore it. We've got to put it back to what it was meant to be. And actually, through history, it turns out that about every 500 years, almost like clockwork, the church has done that. It's had to radically re-examine what it's doing. And as the culture around it, the culture and the society around it, has shifted and changed, so the church has had to renew and kainos itself. It's had to ask, what does practicing our faith in this culture look like? It's had to examine itself and say, you know, what we were doing was great for then, but not anymore. We need to look and see what it looks like in the new wine of the kingdom. What do we need to do today to make the good news of God's everlasting love and everlasting covenant good news today? Because actually what we are preaching or what we have preached is becoming bad news for people. They don't want it. How do we take the love of God and make it relevant for today? So in the first century, the temple was destroyed. The Christians and the Jews were scattered. The center of their faith had been the gathering together in people's homes and in the temple. And the temple had been the center of faith for about 500 years since the return from exile. And the temple was destroyed. The Romans came in, they burnt it down, they destroyed they broke every rock off every other rock and turfed out the Jews. And the church had to re-examine what it meant to be church. And the church was scattered, and with the Roman Empire taking over, the church went from being temple-based and Jerusalem-based to being home-based and being scattered into the Greek world. It kind of almost left Israel and went into Greece and Rome and had to re-examine, what does it mean to be a church? What it means a house church with people in meeting, breaking bread in each other's homes and with apostles traveling between the little churches, making sure that their teaching is on track. But about 500 years later, the Roman Empire collapsed, the road system collapsed, the safety, Pax Romana, came to an end. And the church had to change from being something meeting in houses led by apostles into a monastic system. As the Dark Ages came and the barbarians came in and the churches were destroyed and the libraries were destroyed, and Christianity fled again to the margins of empire, fled to the margins of culture, to places like Scotland and the Irish Islands and Wales. As Christianity was pushed to the margins, it said, what do we look like in this survival mode? And the monastic system, the white monks, the Celtic monks, the green monks, developed a system of where people would come to them at the margins in their monasteries, and they went out and ministered in missional ways into the dark world of the Dark Ages. And for about 500 years, that was the model of church, was that there were travelling monks and nuns and missionaries in these marginal places, kind of almost as a safe haven for Christianity in the pagan world that emerged. Then 500 years again, the Dark Ages come to an end and the Middle Ages emerge. And Europe emerged into this new high culture. And the church again changed from being at the margins to being right at the centre of society, cathedral-based. People moving into the centre of towns, towns and cities growing up around cathedrals with an ecclesiastical system and popes and bishops and clergy and priests. And it changed again for the Middle Ages. But that became hard and it became corrupt. And it stopped preaching the gospel, and so 500 years again, the Enlightenment, the printing press, and out of that, the Reformation. As people read the Bible in their own language for the first time, and the church had to change. The church became word-based. Literacy started to grow. We discovered the priesthood of all believers and started congregational singing. Do you know what we do, what we've done this morning, is only about 400 years old. Before that, singing was banned for the congregation in church. It wasn't just discouraged, it was banned. It was considered sinful. It was something for priests, for trained choristers. That the clergy and the choirs would sing the liturgy and everybody else would sit and watch. And congregational singing was banned. And so what happened at the end of the service, they'd go outside into the graveyard and they'd sing their religious songs to popular tunes. They called it caroling. It's where we get Christmas carols from. And they'd be in the graveyard singing their songs because they weren't allowed to do it in church. But the Reformation comes along and people are reading the Bible and saying, hang on, singing's part of our heritage. And they rediscover it and they renew the church. They kainos it. They restore it for the 1500s onwards. And now it's changing again. You only have to look around and see that actually the church has become not useful for our modern culture. That people don't want anything to do with it. That they're rejecting us. Here in Wales, 97% of people not going to church. And so we need to look at ourselves and say, what does a church look like in the modern world, in the postmodern world, in a post-Christian digital age? How are we going to kainos this wineskin? Because the wine doesn't change. The wine is as beautiful as ever. The wine is as tasty and as nice as ever. But the wineskin has become cracked and hard and inflexible. What's the church going to look like in this new world? If we're not restored and renewed, then we're useless. And when we put the wine into it and it starts to grow, then the skin will split and be ruined and the wine will be poured away. You know, we even look a bit ridiculous at times. And we've got the painful task in our generation, in your generation, of asking, what's the church going to look like in this kainos, renewed, restored mode, where we take the message of God and bring it in a way that's relative today? Because we've become a little bit ridiculous and a little bit useless in some ways. On Wednesdays at the moment, we're holding an alpha course, and we're holding it in the Bear's Head pub And it's really, really exciting. It's really, really scary. And it's really, really exciting. We've had 2 weeks so far. The first week we had 12 people turn up, of which 6 were completely unchurched folk who'd come along. They'd heard it was in the pub and they thought, yeah, I want to talk about God. So they got a pint and they came and they watched a bit of a film and had some food. And it was really interesting. We had a barrister sat next to another barrister arguing about church and about God. And then I was chatting with a woman who was the manager of a bookies, and her husband, who's got to a point in his life where he's saying, I've got a drink problem and I need to find some new way of living. And maybe God is the way. And we had this bunch of people sitting there. We watched the film and we had a chat. And then this Wednesday, we had 36 people come. And so we're talking to the Bear's Head about whether we can move it downstairs, because we're not going to be able to fit anyone else in if it grows again next week. And again, the barristers were going at it in the corner. They were carrying on the conversation from last week. And at the table that I was at with my wife, the language was foul. Utterly foul. I can't even with bleeps and asterisks, I can't tell you what Jesus was for one of these women. And then she burst into tears and said, well, I've got to find something, because I can't go on the way I'm going. And as we sat there and I listened to this foul language and I listened to this guy saying, I've got a drink problem and I need to find something new. And as I listened to someone else who was talking about how they prefer when they go to court having a male judge to a female judge, because they always get softer sentences that way. And as I sat listening to these people, I wondered, how many folk are there in the church who would say, what are you doing in that house mixing with those sinners? That's not where the church is supposed to be. You can't preach the gospel over a pint. Alcohol's got nothing to do with our faith. And I just wondered what Jesus would say about renewing the wineskin. I wondered how many people were saying, that's not how you do church. On that first week, we watched a video of a talk given by a man called Charlie Maxey. And Charlie is an artist. He was an atheist and then an agnostic. But he just got to a point in his life where he realized his life wasn't working. And so he started speaking to some friends. And one of them said, come to Alpha. I go to a place called HGB. Come to Alpha. And he went along and he lasted about 40 minutes. And then the next course around, he went and he went 3 times. And then he didn't go. After his 11th time of going on an Alpha course, he got it. And he gave his life to Jesus. But he describes what it's like as a postmodern atheist, non-churched, not brought up in church person. He describes his experience of church. And what I've done is I've just extracted a little clip of film of Charlie talking. And I just want to show you that now if I can.
Odd stage. Whatever it is we do in kind of Christian thing, we look really odd. We are odd. And I was at an Alpha conference, wherever that is, and years ago in America. And the lovely guy called Jamie Hayes was doing the songs, right? And he said, Charlie, you know, I don't have a percussionist. Can you play percussion? I said, not really. He said, well, try. So I went off to buy. The only thing I could find was this banana. But it also plays percussion, right? That's what I did. So for 3 days, right, on this stage, not this stage, but one similar, I played percussion next to him while he went, oh, Lord, you're great. And so I was doing this, right? And that was that, fine. The end of the conference, I was leaving. I was walking out, and this woman kind of came up. She said, oh, excuse me. I said, yeah, what is it? She said, I just want a quick word. And I said, sure, what do you need to know? She said, I just want to thank you. You know, it's such a great thing you did. Sure. And we tried. And she said, no, really. And I said, it's fine. And I'm not very good at conversations. I get a bit awkward, you know. And so I sort of was trying to walk away. And then she said, no, I just have one more question. And I said, well, what is that? She said, I just have a question for you. And I said, yeah. She goes, why were you on stage? For 3 days. shaking a banana. So basically, it wasn't Mike. She couldn't hear it. All she saw was me being a weird Christian doing this. Three days. Looking really important, like I really was saving the world. No one questioned it. It went on and on and on. And when I went back to where I was staying, I thought, that's what Christianity's like. Everyone's, it looks like this, some weird freak shaking a banana you can't even hear. We do weird things. I'm really sorry. It's nothing to do with the inside of the tin. At all, really. We just respond weirdly, and that's just the way it is. You're loved. Okay, well, we'll shake a banana then.
I love that line. You're loved. Shake a banana. We're weird. Listen, but you've got to understand. The stuff we do, almost none of it has got anything to do with the gospel of God who loves you. Getting together in a special place on a Sunday morning when the rest of the world's having a lie-in. Weird. Coming into a building and singing songs in a culture where nobody does communal singing. Weird. The songs we sing. Weird. Just looks odd. Singing in tongues and waiting on the Spirit. Beautiful for Christians, outsiders. What are you doing? It's like you're shaking a banana for 3 days. Nobody questions it. Putting on special clothes. The language we use. Are you washed in the blood, brother? What? It's weird. It's just strange in our modern culture. We look weird and ridiculous and a bit dried up and cracked and overstretched. And it's time to apply the water of the Spirit and the oil of the Spirit and rub it in and say, God, what do you want us to do in this world today in a way that makes sense? 500 years ago, singing in church, terrible. Nobody would do that. Nowadays, what's the terrible thing that nobody would do that God's saying, you know what? As I rub the oil in of the Spirit, things are going to look a bit different. In our culture, in our society, what we do here in church is weird. But it's not the wine, it's the wineskin. The wine's great. The new wine of the kingdom's wonderful. But the message of Jesus is never weird or irrelevant, just we are. And the question is, how do we take this wonderful message and preach it and practice it and live it and demonstrate it in a way which makes sense to people today? So much sense that they say, I want some of that. Can I have a taste? Can I come and join you? How do we apply the water and the oil of the Spirit to the old wineskin and make it useful for Jesus today? Because actually people want the wine. They want the wine. You sit and talk with people, they want something. They're hungry. They're thirsty. Jesus is an expletive, but I really need him. I don't want anything to do with that church which abused me when I was young, but I want something to do with Jesus. I don't want anything to do with that church which says these people are not acceptable, but I want Jesus. And I've just got one final clip and then I'm going to sit down and I'll let it talk to itself. But, you know, people actually are quite open in some ways to us and to God. We've just got to find a new way and the right way for the 21st century of being the wineskin to contain this wonderful message of the kingdom of God. That last little clip.
What do I think about the church? I wouldn't go to church.
Yeah, I go to church nearly every day.
I normally go to church at Christmas with my family.
I used to go to church when I was younger with my mum, but I used to get bored and not really listen, so...
Church, I think it's actually a really good thing to go to.
Yeah, I like kind of what it stands for in the sense of the community and kind of what it brings.
I don't really like the church.
Maybe a bit old-fashioned.
A bit backwards sometimes.
I believe that church can teach people good morals.
You know, I know people will go to church religiously and then they'll be in a nightclub doing some scandalous things, you know, so does that make them a better person than me?
I think it's a beautiful place to be. It's really calm and peaceful and it's lovely when you're there.
The central towns, central cities, central villages.
If there was a God, I think that he'd be pretty happy for people to just recognise he exists and not, you know, necessarily go to church every Sunday or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got mixed feelings about it, really.